So I have an interview coming up here in a minute with Jeff Riddle, who's created a very interesting new podcast that seeks to take some of the big picture issues we like to talk about on Skeptico, who are we, why are we here, and look at them through kind of how would we put those into action to maybe make some changes in our life. Radical idea. I don't think the interview needs a lot more of an introduction than that. Let's get right to my chat with Jeff Riddle. Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science and spirituality with leading scholars, thinkers, and their critics. Today, we welcome Jeff Riddle to Skeptico. Jeff is the creator and host of a rather amazing new podcast called Transcend. You can see it up on the screen if you're watching this on YouTube. A transformational podcast experience. So, Jeff, welcome to Skeptico. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Alex. Glad to be here.
You know, so I just introduced you as this podcast host and creator, which you are. You're also, I guess we might throw out the term life coach, but I know you don't like that term. Maybe transformation agent we could throw in there or something like that. But I think it's kind of cool to throw that out there to give a grounding, and also because it's something we're probably going to want to talk about in this show a little bit in terms of how what you do fits into the broader landscape of things. So do you want to maybe unpack that a little bit?
Well, yeah. Transcend is something that's come out of a desire to not be a coach anymore, at least not in title. But yeah, the thing about coach is, in theory, it means about bringing somebody forward. You know, if you like go back to the classic, the original term of the word, the idea of like a coach, you know, you fly coach, you're moving people forward. You don't actually pick the destination in theory. You just help them get where they want to go. But I feel like the industry has really been co-opted by a very different type of approach that doesn't really resemble the true meaning of the word. And so for a long time, I've kind of skirted the question, what do you do? And just kind of hung out in the background and tried not to talk about it, because it's not something that I feel connected with in sort of the mass way that people think of coaching or life coaching.
Cool. Let me jump in there right away then and give folks a taste for what you do envision, what you do see going forward. And that would be, we'll play folks a little bit of your podcast here, episode 2. Actually, let's just play it. I have a clip right from the beginning, and rather than set it up at all, and then you can kind of tell us what we heard. So here goes. This is Transcend, episode 2.
Mother to Son, a poem by Claudia Axel, who was born in May of 1955, died in May of 2004. No thing is ever worth anything if you don't go in with butterflies in your heart, fear in the forests of your soul, and wisdom rarely comes when you are seeking it. There are worlds within worlds out there, and sometimes places where the love will have to come from you alone, and you will have to wonder about that. And call me up, even if there's no phone to remember where you got it, but that's okay, because one way or another, I'm here. I'm always here. So you can look up and dream and let them flutter free and just keep saying thank you to the one who makes all that flutter, risk, and shine possible.
Claudia Axel had lived her life as a teacher and a mom, but in her heart, she was an artist, and her passion was her writing. She was also an eternal optimist and looked to the future with hope that things would be better. So it was a bit of a surprise when 14 years ago to the day that we recorded this, our guest today, Martin Storo, woke up to his father sitting on the edge of his bed, preparing to tell him that his mom, Claudia, had passed away from cancer in the night.
Great stuff. So, Jeff, tell us what we were just listening to.
So it's a story about an artist. Our subject, Martin, is a musician. He's been a professional musician for a while. And we are following his journey in relation to the death of his mom, but really into relation to death through three songs that he wrote over 8 years. And in those songs, we hear his evolution in relation to that, where he starts out really not willing to be vulnerable, and then he's kind of in it in the second song. And by the third song, there's a bit of more wisdom, a little more distance in writing about it. And then there's a really cool surprise ending that we set up in the beginning. But yeah, it's we're trying to use story to highlight some really raw and challenging things that we don't typically talk about, certainly not in the mainstream. And that's kind of the objective of Transcend, but certainly the story is really about death and mortality. And we're just starting to touch on that topic, which is often not talked about.
Perfect. You are so succinct, man. I often get flack for cutting people off. I don't need to cut you off. You make your point, and then that's it. We move on to the next thing. I love it. So I am going to move on to the next thing because that's perfect. I think it gives folks a sense for what you're really reaching for here, which is bold and quite amazing. So you're to be commended for that. And
thanks.
People really need to check out Transcend and what you're doing. So from this point, what I'd like to do is kind of launch into exploring what you're bringing, all that you're bringing, and how it fits in with kind of where I'm coming from and Skeptico, and see where the crossover is, and just have this ongoing conversation that I love to have with people. And I'm really looking forward to having with you. So one of the ways I like to start is kind of with some basic definitions, and we maybe handled the first one on this, but let's handle it again. And that is beyond life coach, which you addressed, you know, what about coach? What does it mean to coach? And you said partially what it means. You gave a great definition, but I want to come at it from a different way and maybe restore if we can, maybe the positives about a coach and how we all encounter coaching in our life and benefit from coaching in our life. And sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. And in particular, you and I both, sports was a big part of our life growing up. Coach had a whole different set of meanings. So just dive into that for a minute, the term coach.
Yeah, I mean, we both come from an athletic background, which is, I think, what I liked about your work was that there was that lens to it or that flavor. But I mean, I've been around some great coaches. I've been around some terrible coaches. And I think it's a term that you earn. It's not something that is handed to you. You might play the role, but the best coaches I've ever been around, primarily in an athletic perspective, is their attention is on an outcome that you set. So they're really focused on how to help you or your team move towards some destination that you collectively agree on or you individually agree on. Like my college baseball coach, my goal was to play professional baseball and I got injured. But you know, for him, he wanted me to help the team, but he also cared about my well-being and my goals and was focused on helping me get there. And I had a lot of support to get there. And I think that's a huge distinction in the nature of a coach is you're starting from a place and focusing on where you're trying to get to. There's a destination that you decide, and their job is to facilitate that movement, that direction.
I really like that. And I don't even have anything to add to that. I like that so much. So let's move on to the next one. The title of your show.
Yeah, what does that mean, right?
What does that mean? And also, let's play around with the idea of transformation, because a lot of times when we say transcend, it's tied to this word called transformation. And that brings up the kind of hidden question of from what to what kind of thing. So tell us what you're thinking with transcend.
You know, I don't know. It's such an open-ended word. And I think that's part of the joy of this project is that transitioning more in this direction for me professionally and getting to spend more time in this, it's allowing me to go deeper into this question. Like, what is that? What is it that we're transcending? What, you know, where are we going? And it seems to me, you and I have talked about this before, that we're always in the middle. You know, like we think about people 400 years ago, we talk a lot of Skeptico about the sort of denouncing the ridiculous dopey materialism that formulated 300-400 years ago. But we think about the people before that and how ridiculous and silly they were. And yet we think we have it figured out now, and we have to have the humility to know that in 400 years, people in the future are going to look at us and just think how silly and stupid we were for the things we did and believed. There's a humility in that, and that we are moving towards something, and yet we don't know where. And so there's this idea that we're always in the middle. So we're always in motion, but we don't really know where we're going to get to, and we're going to die without ever having gotten there, at least as far as we know here in the physical sense. So the word transcend, when we picked that word, it came with this question. And I think that's the thing that's a joy for me, because I love digging into these questions, and that's where I'm left with transcend. Now, my goal for people is transformation, to help them change and grow in whatever form that means for them. But really, transcend is that's my question. That's like that's very personal to me. Whereas transformation is sort of the professional goal of the project, to help people have a transformative experience.
You know, I absolutely love this idea of we're always in the middle. And the first time I heard that from you, we were walking on the beach in Del Mar, and I was like, man, I got to write that down and use that. I think I might paste it into this video presentation, because it's so powerful on a lot of different levels. And in the way that you talked about it, just terms of pragmatically through history, but obviously you're also tapping into the deeper personal spiritual understanding of, hey man, we're never gonna get there. We never really are away from where we came. We're always in the middle, you know? Right. So I think that's really cool. So I'll tell you what, those are two great definitions that we kind of wrapped up here. Let me move into the kind of skeptical process that I've been hung up on lately. I think there's a lot of tie-ins to your work, but I like always reflecting it back to this three-step process, or applying it to this three-step process, because it helps me see where different guests are in relation to the stuff that I'm interested in working in. So for me, step one of that process is to follow the data. You know, I always say, follow the data wherever it leads, kind of thing. But you know, really in preparing for this episode and listening to what you've put together, I actually had a slightly different take on this. And I love where it took me, because what I realized, and this may seem really obvious, but we all have our own data. So following the data is both, you know, the real part of following the data that's out there, but we have our own data, and not in a kind of fake, you know, oh, every snowflake is unique kind of way, but in a way that I have some real stuff that I've figured out in my life experience that I bring to the table as my data. And I can share that with you, and you probably don't know it, and let me tell it to you kind of thing. So I thought we might talk a minute, or you might talk a minute, about what's your data. You mentioned the baseball thing. That's part of your data. You know some stuff from that. But what else is your, well, tell us about that data, and tell us what other data you have.
Yeah, well, there's a paradox here in that the position, the professional stance in the work that I do, and even in trying to produce these transcend episodes, is to remove myself as much as I can from it. It's one of my beefs with the industry, is that people come in and say, look what I've done. Look at me. I'm great. I have a private jet, or you know, a fancy car. They get on Facebook and take pictures of themselves in that way. And then they use that to shame people into feeling like they don't have what they have. And that's what gets them to buy. So, and I mean, we'll get into this, but I have a huge issue with that approach. I actually think it reinforces the problem. It literally, the industry that I'm in actually recreates more of the problem so that they can continue to sustain. And so there's a dilemma there in the data, in the sense that my life experience and what I've learned actually is irrelevant in the work. But as far as someone feeling comfortable or safe, or feeling like, hey, this guy has something to say, yeah, certainly there's a background, and there's some history there. So obviously baseball, in a pursuit of professional baseball through college, and then and I end up getting injured. And I actually share that in the first episode, as you heard in my story. And that was a huge part of it. I was a catcher it's a really heady position. You're controlling the pitcher, you're dealing with the umpire. And then I was also asked to be a hitter for the team. And, you know, you're constantly failing. That is your experience in baseball, is you fail 3 out of 4 times and you're considered great. And having to learn to deal with failure and also be a student and, you know, pursuing this dream and all these other things, it kind of grew me up quickly. And then the real story, and it took me a long time to figure this out, and it's what I told in the first episode, was that after that, I kind of went on this Renaissance man mission where when baseball didn't work out, I joined a band and toured, and then I started some businesses and had some successes and failures, and I kept jumping from thing to thing. And for a long time, I thought I was just a Renaissance man and who was, you know, liberated and who was like, I'm not following convention. And what I really had realized, it took me a while, was that I was just running from a lot of pain that was in my past. So I lost my mom when I was 19, and it had been a long journey ever since I was a kid. She basically had cancer. And so I was a witness to that. And I just got into this loop of trying to stay in, it's this complex thing, but I was trying to stay in suffering or struggle to kind of stay connected to her. And it took me a long time to be able to move beyond that and get comfortable making an alternative choice where I was no longer going to try to struggle to be in connection with my mom. And just in connection to life. So that journey really brought me to where I am today and informs a lot of my work. But again, that data is helpful in that there's life experience there. And yet it actually is kind of irrelevant when you're actually helping somebody or working with somebody or trying to be, help somebody be in a transformative state. My experience actually is irrelevant to their well-being in that situation. We can expound on that a bit, but.
Maybe. I mean, I can't challenge. No, I can't challenge that because that's your take on it and it's your thing that you do. I guess, you know, where I'm coming at it from, like a skeptical perspective and the show, and that is that what your first two episodes helped me see in the way that you just were very kind of honest there about diving deep into yourself is that, you know, you do have a perspective that you're bringing that is based on something more than just experience in the bad sense, experience in the sense of the way that people hide from any analysis or any criticism about their beliefs, you know, like, hey man, you can't challenge me. This is my experience, you know, which on one hand, hey, I'm not here to challenge anyone about their experience. But on the other hand, kind of from a skeptical perspective, I'm going to say, well, I'm interested in your experience as it fits in with the broader set of experiences that I might look at. So let's say we're going to take near-death experience and we have somebody who says, you know, my experience is there's Satan down there and the flames are going to, you know, lick your feet when you get down there. I'm like, hey, that is your experience. It doesn't fit in with the broader experience that I went and studied and looked up. So, you know, let's have both of those on the table. And I guess, to reel that back to the transcend moment is, I feel like you're bringing something in a way in terms of saying, well, no, look, I have a perspective on this and here is my perspective and here is the way we're going to tackle this thing. Because the other part of that I mentioned that I really thought was great and I want to commend you on is because you are this baseball guy. You are this successful guy who has a successful family, has a successful career, and yet here you are talking about love and talking about, you know, connection and all this stuff, but you're not doing it in a, you know, oh, I'm in touch with my feminine side kind of way. You're not denying that you might be in touch with your feminine side, but you're not leading with that in some kind of a cartoonish way. You're just saying, to me, you're saying, this is my data. My data is, yeah, you know, this is what it takes to be successful over in this part of life. And this is what it takes to be successful in figuring out, you know, these wounds that I've had, you know, that we all have and how to move forward with them. What do you think about that?
When I finally work with somebody, they're usually in so much pain about whatever it is they're going through. And nobody wants to talk about that. Like, nobody wants to talk about both sides of that, the binary of that, the pain and the love. The what they want is to feel loved, to feel whole, to feel complete, and they feel not whole. They feel worthless. They feel separate of, shamed, whatever, right? And so many people are experiencing that, and nobody wants to talk about the hard stuff, and nobody wants to dig into the hard stuff. And I think that is part of my experience has been, and I don't know why. I mean, I'm sure I could dissect where it came from, but learning to just bravely walk towards some really hard things and then being in it and being in the middle and accepting that there's no destination, and then at the same time getting somewhere, seeing progress, seeing growth. And I think that's informed me in this project and in my work and just in general in life is not being afraid of those things and kind of running towards them full steam. And what's coming out of that is a real rawness, and people are responding really positively. And some of the things that I was hoping would work are working in a way that I was really surprised by already. And we're only on episode 2. I mean, we're doing this interview. I'm already getting those responses from people saying, wow, this was transformative. It helped me with this or this or that. And it's because we're just dealing with the hard stuff. We're dealing with stuff that people are just really afraid to deal with. Well, vulnerability is having the courage to talk about something you don't want to talk about. And there are people who either don't talk about it or they talk about it too much, and it's not courage. It's not courageous. They're just oversharing. And it's like, where's that middle ground to really be real with people and expose what it's like to be human in general and certainly today?
I like that. And I particularly like this charging in kind of thing. Again, I think that's what you're bringing that's kind of unique. That's your data to a certain extent that you're following. That's what it takes to overcome tough things is that ability to charge in. But let me leave that for a minute. I kind of pounded that point. Because the other thing that where I'm coming from is this idea of look for the conspiracy. And your show and my interactions with you made me rethink that as well, because it's important to me. But I realized it doesn't really directly relate to your work. And then I thought, you know what, maybe it does. Because what I think the conspiracy thing is really all about for me is this idea of how can this be? And that is being willing to be uncomfortable with the craziness that we might encounter. Now, for me, you know, why science is wrong, it was the craziness of we are biological robots in a meaningless universe. And the craziness that is that no one really believes that. No one lives their life like that. Even people who claim that they do, they don't, right? And yet we go and we walk our kids to school and we hold their hand and we say, go on into science class, and that's what they're going to teach you. And then we let them go to a psychologist and that's what they tell them. And we just let it go on and we don't stop and say, how can this be? How can we not be openly challenging this craziness? And I think when we get there and when we are willing to say, you know what, I'm willing to deal with the crazy uncomfortableness that there is this, how can this be moment. And I'm willing to take a different course if necessary. You know, I'm willing to say, you know what? No, I will not stand by and just let this happen. I will not, I may not, you know, get out there and wave a banner in the street and stop traffic, but I will not go along willingly with stuff that I think doesn't only fit my belief systems, but in general, I think is harmful for society or culture, even my family, you know? So with that, I guess I tee it up, you know, what's your, how can this be moment question, either in your work before Transcend or through the Transcend experience?
It's happening in both. With Transcend, actually the episode I'm working on right now, I've got 3 weeks to put together a story. And there's a reason why only NPR people do storytelling as their medium, because it's really freaking hard. I just decided I was going to do that because to me, it's the way that this is going to work. If I can't do that, it's not going to work. So I have to figure it out. But one of the questions that's coming up in this story is do we even transcend anything? Is that even like, I'm basically going to question the entire show or the brand of the show Transcend, and the name in the episode. And so there's this, even right now, I'm like in that, like, what is it? Is it anything like through looking at someone's story? But, so I'm in that right now and it's been kind of a huge challenge, but then in my work and what led me to do this project was that, I mean, come on, how many people have tried a diet and how many times have they tried a diet? And we all know that shit doesn't work. Like we all know it doesn't work. And yet it's this, you know, $70 billion industry. There's countless pills and products and services, and it's ridiculous. And to me, that's like the whole self-help, psychology, health. You can lump that whole world together, and we all know it doesn't work, and yet we keep buying into it. And I have a real issue with that. It gets me like so angry, and it's why I literally would go to a party. So my wife and I recently moved from, we were in San Francisco, we moved to the Midwest, and to be near family. And I fortunately don't have any clients here. So I get the wonderful opportunity of never having to talk about my work here without it having any consequence whatsoever. But my wife gets so annoyed at me because people ask me the question, like, what do you do? And she goes, you sound creepy. Like you're skirting the question, you know? I'll just like dance around it and not really tell them the answer. And she just gets so angry with me because she's like, you sound like a creep. And so maybe you're not talking about work, but now you sound worse, you know? And I skirt the question because I hate saying I'm a coach. I can't stand the word because it's aligned with this whole industry where we keep buying into this idea that like, hey, if you just take some pills or do this diet or, you know, look at me, I have a fancy Ferrari. And if you just pay me $10,000, you can have this too. It's a sham. And it drives me crazy. There's not integrity. There's no barrier to entry. And yet it's this, you know, everybody's rah-rah and no one wants to talk about the fact that when you change, it hurts. And just the whole thing drives me absolutely bonkers. And so Transcend is my little, okay, I'm going to maybe push against the industry a little bit and try to, in a public way, do something meaningful that bucks the trend, my own little skeptico of my industry. And try to take people on a journey where I can actually help them have the experiences they want and call out the bullshit, whether I do it directly or not, I'm not sure yet, but certainly start to move the needle in a way I think is meaningful. It drives me nuts.
Great. So, you know, we've kind of gone through my thing, follow the data, look for the conspiracy. My third step is find the deep spirituality. And again, this is an easy link between me and you and what we're all about. I mean, I think anyone who's like a decent person at all, what we'd consider, you know, a moral good person, unless you're like really an evil dude, finding the deep spirituality is saying, hey, what propels me forward? What moves me to be better, you know? And in that sense, though, I think implied in what you're saying is a question that I keep banging against, and it is implied, and I love making it explicit here in this show and in a couple other shows which I have, and that is, for you and I, we're all about keeping score. Coaches keep score, players keep score, people who are of that mindset keep score, and what that means is what works, what doesn't. What's effective? What propels us forward? And being brave enough, when we really contrast it, you know, you're kind of maybe getting on the coaching, life coaching industry. Hey, I talk to all sorts of transformational people. You know, I just spoke with a woman last episode. You know, I should have been in total sync with this person. She's so into yoga. I'm so into yoga. She's so into psychology. And it's crossover with yoga, which I think is awesome. I couldn't I don't want to say I couldn't stand her, but I couldn't stand her. I was so frustrated. It was such a frustrating interview because she's not really interested in what works and what doesn't. She said, well, everyone has their own thing, you know, and this relativism that just washes everything away to the point where we can't get down and say, okay, yeah, I can't definitively say this is better than this, but I do want to know what works in whatever sense I can measure it with whatever limitations there are to measuring it. So with that, I thought we'd have some real fun. You okay. And I kind of fun stuff that we can do. You know, I've mentioned Tony Robbins on this show a couple times, and that is like death knell, you know, because you mentioned Tony Robbins, you're in the Tony Robbins cult, you know, and you can say like I did that, hey man, I was into self-improvement. I read 200 books. I was doing everything I could to be successful. No, 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 no. People do not hear that. They hear Tony Robbins. Tony Robbins, you're in a cult. You know, that's all people can hear. I just had an interview conversation just a couple episodes ago, and it went exactly like that. You know, and the Tony Robbins thing comes up, and this guy goes, oh, mate, you know, I know all about Tony Robbins. It's goal setting, right? It's goal setting, right? I go, but you really don't know anything about it. It's goal setting, right? You know, I'm like, you know, you don't really know what you're talking about. And what I want to tee up for people who don't know, I'll dive deeper into the Tony Robbins thing just to tee up this coaching thing and this thing of what works. Here's Tony Robbins, amazing video. It kind of explains itself, but it's him doing one session with the guy who struggled with stuttering for 30 years. Here, I'll let you listen.
Rashad. Bill. I've stuttered for as long as I can remember. My freshman year of college, one of the first courses I took was a speech clash, and I froze. The grade I received was an F. I went from a full-time college student on scholarship to stocking shelves on the
sound that comes to you. Make the sound. Make the sound of the warrior. The warrior does not stutter. Ever. Own the warrior. Says now.
The warrior says, I am free.
The warrior says.
The warrior says, I am brilliant.
That's right. The warrior says.
The warrior says that I am electric.
The warrior says.
I am awesome.
Ask the warrior, do you need to stutter anymore?
No. That was awesome.
You're awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. Wow. So, what's next, coach?
So I got to hold back the tears every time I see that clip, but it ends. I didn't play it, but he stands up in front of these 5,000 people and gives a speech and all the rest of this stuff. So we ought to note a couple of things. One is that people who are skeptical, I don't know what they'll say, but this guy tried everything. Right, he went to all sorts of psychologists to see what his deep underlying pain was. He went to speech therapists for years and years. The guy is a successful guy. The guy chose a career in sales, which, I mean, how bold is this human being to say, despite this obstacle I have, that's what I'm going to choose, but that's what he chose. And here is a guy with a very specific set of techniques. That is Tony Robbins. If you read his work, if you go to his seminars, if you learn, it's not just, you know, getting people to scream therapy or anything like that. It's very precise what he does. And it seems to be extremely effective. I don't know who else in the world could transform somebody's life in one session of 10 minutes, but he did it. He's to be commended for that. But the other part of that I really loved equally as much as all that is what we just talked about. What does the guy say at the end? What does he say? What's next, coach? This guy is a winner, man. I'm telling you, I would bet on that guy. I just bet on him for life. It's like I just overcame the biggest challenge, obstacle in my life. What's next, coach? So I just wanted to juxtapose that with all the dissing you've been doing on coaching. Because, man, coaching has a place. We don't need less coaching. We need more coaching from better coaches.
We need better coaching.
Well, when I contrast that with the interview I did last week, or like so many interviews I've done, where people are not willing to step up and say, what I'm offering is effective. It's more effective than these other things for this reason. And they're not going in this, well, you know, whatever works for you kind of thing, which is fine. Hey, it is about whatever works for you. But it's also about being willing to say, I'm going to step into the arena and measure what I think works against what you think works. So I've kind of thrown a lot on the table there. You know, tell me what you think.
Well, so Tony Robbins and I actually have a similar background. He's using what's called neurolinguistic programming in that video. And the belief by those of us that come from that lineage is actually that you can help somebody in 10 minutes or an hour, that is possible. It's not a presupposition of psychologists or therapists. You know, we could walk through everything he's doing in there. I can tell you exactly what he's doing, how he's doing it, the neurological impact that he's making, why it's working. And earlier in the video, he brought in, familiar with the video, the young man, he remembered back to being two in front of Rocky and Bullwinkle, and his father started beating his mom. And so there was an association. It's basically a simple association that the kid makes it to, that I am the problem and therefore I can become the solution. So, and he associates, I think it was Bullwinkle stutters. I'm not as familiar with that, but he assumes stuttering as a strategy to effectively feel safe in an environment that was incredibly unsafe. So what he's essentially doing is creating a way for him to have an alternative opportunity when he feels unsafe or when he's trying to exist in the world. He's giving him more options through using this thing called NLP. The thing is, most coaching is not that, right? Most coaching is, okay, I'm going to hold, okay, what do you want, kid? If they even ask you that question, he's like, I don't want to stutter. I'm like, cool. Okay, you're not going to stutter. I'm going to hold you accountable. Okay, and you're going to pay me however many thousands of dollars, and I'm going to basically yell at you and make you feel shitty for stuttering. That is literally what the coaching industry is. And that doesn't work. It's not effective. Something like what Tony Robbins is doing is effective. And I have questions about it and how I might approach that, but what he's doing is very effective. And it's, you know, if you go back and look at NLP and you go look at the Wikipedia page of that, it's going to look just like, you know, looking up Dean Radin on Wikipedia. It's like the parapsychology of the psychology industry. It's this bastardized version that's been picked apart and said it can't work because it's too easy. It's the path of least resistance is not okay for us as human beings to accept that there's a possibility that there's things out there that are better than others. And the traditional academic path is the only way. So there is this kind of interesting juxtaposition here between what he's doing, what Tony Robbins is doing, using a technology that's very effective, and what the industry as a whole will say about it. And there's all these studies that will say that it doesn't work. And if you go back and look at the studies, they don't actually, the research is poorly done. And then everybody references the research is kind of like, you know, a lot of things you run into on the show.
I got to take issue with you a little bit in that. And this is one of the problems I see when anyone brings up, it's kind of the same thing. Like I was talking with the other guy with Tony Robbins. Oh, I know what Tony Robbins is. It's goal setting. Yeah. Oh, I know what Tony Robbins is. It's NLP. It's like, no, you know what Tony Robbins is? Tony Robbins is a really simple idea. Success leaves clues. That is the essence of coaching as well. It's that if you want to be better, if you want to find something that works, go find somebody who can do it.
That's NLP. That's literally NLP.
That's coaching.
It's based on NLP, which is based on the human potential movement, which is where I came from. But I'm telling you, that is NLP. I'm trained in NLP. That's my coaching methodology.
I've studied Bandler and Grinder. I've studied NLP. I've studied, like I told you, all the success literature, right? And they're all saying the same thing. I guess what I'm challenging you on is to see, I kind of feel in a tiny way, if I can poke at you, that you're in too deep to take a step back and realize the power that you bring as a coach and the difference that you bring as a coach. And maybe you realize that, but I guess that's what I want to kind of highlight and celebrate is that, hey, this idea that I love the way you said it at the beginning, that the true coach is coaching you towards your potential. It's individualized, saying, where are you trying to get? And it's getting that. And that is such a different model from what we see out there and what we see happening. And I'm not even going to let you respond to that.
Oh, come on.
No, because I want you to respond to it in the context of some other what works, what doesn't. And then at the end, we're going to put that really to the test of what Transcend, the podcast experience you're creating, and what that might mean there. Okay? So with that, let me tell you what else I think works. This is personally what I think works. You know what works? Yoga works. So I'm going to stand up now and say, I'm going to switch hats and say, oh no, it's not Tony Robbins. It's not NLP. It's not coaching, whatever you want to put it. Yoga works. And here's my buddy, Wim Hof. And you know, a year ago, I've been doing yoga for too many decades to talk about and not be embarrassed about my age, but I found it extremely effective. But 1 year ago, I discovered Wim Hof, and I discovered his breathing techniques and his ice bath technique, where there I am sitting in looking out at the ocean, but sitting in a 35 degree tub, you know. And to me, what that means is what I've shared on this show, what I picked up from Rick at Buddha at the Gas Pump in his interview with the Hugging Saint Amma of World, What World? It's yoga to me is transcending the idea that we are completely tied to this world and loosening that up a little bit so that we can see that we're in the middle in this other way too, and that we're in the middle of this world and some completely different world that transcends this world. And yoga is a way that kind of really drives that home for me in terms of helping me see that, you know, world, what world? So tell me how that relates to what you're learning and experiencing with Transcend.
Yeah, I love you bring up yoga. I've done yoga before, but it was for a girl, so I don't think that it was a very effective spiritual experience.
You're into that Tantra stuff, huh?
Well, she was into yoga and meditation. I was like, I'll give it a try. But yeah, I was just there to be there. But you know, with the world, what world? And I remember, I think I heard the story. It was the Hugging Saint, where someone had asked her about why she's doing all of this. And it was like, you know, you're helping all these people and you're out digging the latrines. I think is how you told the story. And she said, world, what world? And you know, with Transcend, and I don't know if this is where you're going with the question, but this is how that, at least that story that you told about world, what world relates to me, and that she's just kind of doing it because that's what she's doing. It's like a self-contained experience. For Amma, it doesn't seem that she's doing it because it's all these people that she's helping. That's just what she's doing. It's her job. It's how she is expressing in the world. And I feel Transcend for me has a similar flavor. Like I said in the beginning, the name Transcend for me is a question, and that's what I want to solve for. And I believe it will help a lot of people along the way. And I'm going to try to be as effective in that way, but it's because of the joy for me of doing this project of asking the tough and big questions and being curious about what are we transcending? If anything, where are we going? Which is an unanswerable question. And that to me is the world, what world moment, where I'm saying, great. Okay. And I'm going to keep doing this until it doesn't solve that for me anymore. It doesn't provide that resource of curiosity that it does right now, where I get a lot of joy, where I'm sitting in my studio banging my head against my freaking desk because I'm trying to tell a story and I don't know how. You know, I'm not trained as a journalist, but I just love the process.
Which is cool. And maybe this doesn't relate as much to what you're doing right now, but I kind of think we're on the edge of finding that connection, because the real part of that story, you kind of told two parts there, and I'm going to pick up on both. I mean, the first part is, hey, I'm doing this to get to a place where I could understand. And what I see in Ama and in some other spiritually advanced, if we can say that kind of thing, people is, they've already gotten a little bit further down the path to where they're not really that interested in doing per se. They're not excited like you and I are about the next show, the next, I am. I'm excited about that. I am excited about whether my kids turn out to be, you know, what I hope they can be in terms of all their potential and all that. But what about people who have transcended that? Have gotten to the other side, like a lot of mystics and spiritual people tell us that there is this kind of non-dual nature to it. There is this kind of nothing there kind of thing. But the beauty of it, and I think, and that's the part of her story that I think is so beautiful, is this person comes back though. It says, no, I'm still digging latrines. You would look at me and you wouldn't see any transcendence, you would say, gee, she's a strong backed woman, Indian woman who can dig them latrines and hug them people, you know? And world, what world? It's no difference. It's sitting in that ice bath. It's cold. It's not cold. It doesn't make any difference. Don't get too attached to what you think is happening here. And does that maybe lie ahead in your path? Maybe that's, is that part of episode 3?
It very well might be. I feel like there are moments where I really, I think they're like flow state moments where I'm working on it and I get kind of in that just oneness of it, where I'm just one with the project. It's a very much an artistic expression. And then there are a lot of really uncomfortable moments of either telling a story that's uncomfortable or just not knowing what I'm doing. And I don't know if I'm going to get there. I don't know that I want to get there. Maybe I do, but right now I really am enjoying the excitement of working on the next thing and the excitement of where my kids are going and the excitement of, you know, maybe someday picking up a lake house. Like, there are certain aspects of being in the culture that we live in and being in the world that we live in that I'm enjoying. And I don't know what it would feel like to be so detached from that in a choice way, where I'm not detached, you know, choosing to be detached in a spiritual sense, how I would feel. And I imagine if I'm there, that's a great place to be. But I mean, what about you? If your excitement of the next episode, like, is that, are you looking to transcend to that point? Or are you, I mean, is there a choice there about that that is available? Or how do you feel about it in the context of, you know, you're at what, 400 some odd, or 300, 400, 500 episodes of Skeptigo?
No questions, Jeff, just answers.
I really
don't mind answering that question, yeah. But I tell you, I'm going to push forward with it because I think I answer it all the time. I want to get more out of you, and there's, because you've kind of teed up the next one here. So let's just go forward and I'll try and answer that to the extent that it's necessary. In this, because let's remind people what we're doing. We've taken on the task of really saying, looking at honestly what works, what doesn't, and being willing to make some kind of value statements in terms of just not falling for the spiritual relativism of just, well, you know, there's many paths to transcend or to whatever. It's like, no, some are more effective than others. Let's find out what they are. So Rupert Sheldrick has been in and around the show for a long time. He's been a terrific mentor and a guest for me. But I had him on recently to talk about his book, Science and Spiritual Practices. And I pushed him pretty hard on the religion thing, because this is another one of those areas that, hey, this is what works. Religion works. Christianity, in Rupert's case, this is what works, Jeff. You don't need to go any further than that. So let me play this clip from Dr. Sheldrick, and then we'll chat about it a little bit.
I have an option living here in Hampstead, England. On Sundays, I can stay at home and read the Sunday newspapers, and I can meditate, which I do anyway every day. Or I can go to a church service on Sunday morning where I sing beautiful hymns, there's incredibly beautiful music, there's a community of people I like and respect. I take part in a communion that for me is important, the Holy Communion. I take part in collective prayers for the welfare of local people and people all over the world. And I usually emerge from that experience feeling uplifted and inspired, and I receive a blessing from a priest in beautiful robes. And I emerge from that feeling uplifted and inspired.
Okay, let's stop right there. I love this because there's not really much to argue with, but of course that's a big opportunity for me to drive a Mack truck through that one. And that is that, you know, yeah, Rupert, it's hard to argue that, you know, going and being a part of your community and connecting to your deep spiritual nature is probably better than washing your car. But is it enough? When you walk into that church, like I still have occasion to do a couple of times, even though I have to grit my teeth when I do it, but I feel like maybe for family or for other reasons, it's kind of a good thing to do. I'm face to face with folks who are not asking these obvious questions about whether this is real. I mean, not real in the spiritual sense, real in the stories that are attached and tag along with this about this guy who lived and what he did and all this stuff. And it's like the old thing of somebody, you know, in sales, someone will tell you three things that you absolutely agree with so he can say that fourth thing, and you're now in the habit of saying, yeah, yeah, yeah. And Jesus was the only begotten son, and he died on the third day and rose again. Yeah, you know. So is it enough? Is it enough? Is it enough to stop where Dr. Sheldrick's stopping? Or do we need to push forward? Does the truth matter? And I would, you know, you can tackle it from the Christian or the religious perspective, but that's not really your thing. I would even just broaden it up and say, does the truth matter? Do we, in this quest for what works, what doesn't, how much do we have to care about the truth?
There are some assumptions in that question as to who is we in this and why, and who does it matter to? Because if it's us individually, yeah, sure. I mean, you and I will probably both agree on, hey, yeah, we don't go to church for a reason. In a broader sense, it gets a bit complex when we start asking that question, because to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, the intention of the question is about progress or about growth. If we're buying into historical Jesus and it's not true, then we need to reevaluate things so that we can take steps forward in a more positive direction, perhaps.
Well, let me jump in there with this.
Yeah.
Because we do need to move it beyond Christianity, because that's a sinkhole and people get stuck in it and they just can't hear, you know. I'd bring it back to the conspiracy thing, and I'll add a tiny little story. You know, I just heard Greg, a terrific interview that Greg Carlwood did the other day with this 9/11 truth filmmaker from Italy, Massimo, I forget his last name. I'll try and put it up on the screen, maybe fill it in after on the video. But he said a really profound thing. This is about 9/11, but it totally applies to all these things. He goes, you know, really at this point, it's a psychological issue. It really isn't an evidence issue or a data issue. And anyone who's looked into 9/11, there's just the fundamental truth to that. You know, I mean, his point, though, is what I want. It's a psychological issue. So that's what I'd say about, you know, the historical Jesus kind of thing. That's what I'd say about people who get attached to therapy. You know, if we're going to sit, we're going to talk NLP, you know, people are really into that, and that's really the only way. These beliefs that we hold on to become so important to us, and we're so unwilling to give them up, that is really the psychological hook that holds us back, is we're not willing to say, is this true as the best way that I can figure it out? And am I willing to live with the uncomfortableness of, okay, that isn't true in the way that I thought it was. Psychotherapy doesn't work in the way that I thought it does. Freud was a complete charlatan, and if he was alive today, he would just be ridiculous. No one would, he'd just be a laughing stock, right? So I don't have to pretend like, you know, that's real in that sense, but I can pick out parts of it that are tested in a way that, and you see where I'm going with all this. So that's what I mean when I say more broadly, does the truth matter? Are we compelled to constantly be looking for that evidence-based truth beyond our personal truth? You know, because contrasting that with the, oh, my, this is my experience thing, saying, well, you know, here's what the data tells us. You get a sense of what I'm saying.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's the important thing to focus on, is it's not really about the truth. It's about how do we move people to think in a way that enables them to move towards the truth. And I think there's a distinction there in, are we focused on the end game, or are we focused on the journey of how do we get them there? And it's really funny, because the first time I listened to Skeptico, it was a Joe Atwell episode. And I was like, I can't listen to this. I mean, I'm not Christian, but I was like, what is this guy talking about? And it was, you know, and I turned it off. And it took me a while to come back to it. And when I did, I started at episode one, and I got to go on the Skeptico journey. So that when I listen to an episode now, like, you know, I haven't listened to the most recent one with Christopher Knowles, but when I listen to that, I'm not going to be like, this guy, what is he talking about? Because I've been on the journey. There's been a transformation for me to see and go through the process of all of those moments of like, how can this be? How can this be? Pull back. How can this be? Pull back. So that I could get to where I am now. And I'm probably still well on my way in that journey. And that's what happens when I tell people about Skeptical all the time, but I always tell them with this huge caveat, you cannot start the latest episode. You got to go back to the beginning, because you won't, if you listen to that episode, the recent ones, you're not going to be able to handle it. You're just not there. You need to go on that journey so that you can open yourself up to that possibility of what it means to be skeptical, what it means to change your perspective, what it means to feel the discomfort and survive it and go through the discomfort and of having those nights where you can't sleep because you're going, what is reality? What does it mean to be a member of this country? What does that even mean anymore? And these questions that come up through that process, each step gets you a little bit closer to the possibility of being in that state of being okay in the middle, you know, being okay in the journey without a destination, without knowing what the answer is and moving towards it. And I think, to me at least, the more important thing is not the truth, even though I think you and I personally both enjoy the truth. That to me is a fun journey, but in terms of the larger question, it's not about the truth, it's about how do we move people towards that? How do we help them feel comfortable identifying or thinking in a way that enables them to find it?
I really like that, and I think it's a great way to maybe come back to this project that you're working on, Transcend, and maybe talking some more about how all this stuff relates, because I think you just did, you know, so I'm kind of struggling with what more is there to add, but I want to check and see if there is more to add. You know, one of the things that is pretty unique and about your show and your approach is it's this two-part thing where you engage people in a storytelling component where they're just basically telling their story. And then a second part where you're, and I love this, I mean, you're engaging, right? You're doing what I guess I wanted to hear and what I was advocating before, is you're engaging them and poking them, and not in a confrontational way, but just in a way of saying, hey, how does this really relate? You're engaging them in the process that they went through. You're not leaving it at story, you know, because I think we do that too much. We so want to say your experience. And part of that is a very appropriate response to this biological robot meaningless universe thing that says you have no experience. Oh, that's not even real. You know, really, when we get down to it, you don't really have an experience. So we need to celebrate the fact that we do have experience. But then I like where you're at, which is coming around it at the end and saying, okay, let's dive in and let's put a whole process, which you do in the weeks beyond the story, in terms of deconstructing that story and what the lessons are and how we move forward from it. So can you talk to all of that and what you're trying to do and how you see that going?
Yeah, it really follows a lot of the things that I believe and inform my work. I've tried to translate into media. And so we start with the story because I want people to feel what that person went through, but nobody will deny someone's experience, right? Like if someone has a near-death experience and you hear the story and it's a compelling story, you're not going to say, well, that didn't happen. You're just going to say, you know, if you're skeptical or you're a materialist, you might say, well, I'm going to try to explain how this happened, but you might still engage with the story. And by doing that, what we're doing is we're disarming people from immediately rejecting the content outright. We're bringing them on a journey. We're having them feel what it feels like by identifying with the character in the story. He was a real person and going on that journey. So in a sense, the story enables the initial transformation through emotion. The follow-up interview is to then inform some of the process, some of the how, some of the details that went there, some of the more tangible stuff, so that people can then not only feel it, but then have something to walk away with. And then, of course, every week thereafter, we send follow-up content, and we're always deconstructing over the course of the month because we want to keep that process going, keep expanding those avenues and opening people up. So we're really, it is very thought out. Is it going to work? I don't know. It's still too early. It'll probably look different in the future, but that's kind of the goal. Is how do we use media in a way that can help somebody actually go on a transformative experience? How can I get somebody in an episode and over a course of a month to go from skeptical episode one to skeptical episode 400 and feel okay about that? And so some of those topics I want to be getting into are some of these bigger topics that, you know, things like near-death experience, mediumship, reincarnation stuff, like these, some of these things that I find really fascinating, philosophy, Bernardo Kastrup's work. Like I want to bring that into an environment where we can deconstruct it through a story. So people have reference. They won't deny it. They won't say this is not true. They can make their determination about it, but I'm trying to kind of find that way of helping them take a step forward without it being an immediate rejection that this is BS or, you know, is just not possible.
That's awesome. It really is. And it shines through just brilliantly in the first two episodes, which are terrific. And I really encourage people to check out Transcend Experience. It's pretty easy to find. You'll find it in the show notes. So Jeff, in the time that we have left, then, you know, tell us more about, you did kind of tee up where you're going with this. Tell us how it's going so far. You said it kind of has gotten off to a really good start, which is great news. So how is it going?
It's a process. I mean, I'm treating this like a startup company in the sense of how I'm approaching it. So it's a lot of learning, a lot of failing as quickly as I can. And that means that there's some tough days working on it. But every day at the end, I walk away grateful that I get to do this. And it's something I'm really proud of and excited about. And it's something I'm happy to talk about when someone asks me, what do you do? I actually have something I can share now that that feels good. And my wife won't get mad at me for being creepy. So, I don't know where it's going to go. You know, what is it going to look like in 10 years? I don't know. But I have a 10-year time horizon. I'm not going to let up on this project. I think it's worthwhile. And I think there's some really exciting opportunities to explore people's experience, but do it in a way that takes that next step. And so I'll keep chugging along and being right there and having my own transformation through the process and continue to, you know, be curious about that question of what does it mean to transcend, and we'll see where it goes.
Awesome, Jeff. Thanks for being here on Skeptico.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks again to Jeff Riddle for joining me today on Skeptico. One question I guess I'd have to tee up from this interview is, what do you think about Jeff's idea that we're always in the middle? We're always in the middle. I think it's a powerful way to look at these issues surrounding personal change, personal growth, transcendence, spiritual growth, and all those things. But what do you think? What is the personal meaning for you of always being in the middle? Or maybe you think it doesn't fit. So do let me know. Tell me, drop me a comment here, send me an email, jump onto the Skeptical Forum, which I always love to see people interact on the Skeptical Forum and interact with me on the Skeptical Forum. So if that suits you, please do it. Lots of interesting shows coming up. Super excited about bringing them all to you. Until next time, take care and bye for now.